FM. Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA Meeting on Air. My name is Rachel and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Rachel.
We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
The Preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in, and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey in recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off, we have Dougie.
Hi, I'm Dougie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dougie.
Thanks, Rachel. Yeah, it's really good to be here this morning. Lovely sunny day in Auckland. And great to be able to share my experience, strength and hope with the wider community, whoever's listening in. Yeah, a bit about myself. I'm now 6 years sober on my journey, but it was a long journey to get to that position of sobriety. So I'll give you some of my background. Much of it might seem familiar to many of you listening in. I was nothing special, just common garden variety alcoholic, as I eventually accepted in AA, having thought I was something special and different. I was a drinker all my life, started in my teenage years. I actually came from a non-drinking family, so perhaps that's when I started thinking I was special. I was breaking out of the family mould, the family tradition, or at least that's what I thought. It was only in my sobriety, after 40 years of drinking, only in my sobriety that I discovered my grandfather was an alcoholic, which is why my mother was so vehemently against alcohol. A couple of her brothers were also alcoholics, and it turns out it's a family issue. Not a good tradition to follow in, but it was there. But whilst many of those years I thought alcohol was fun and enjoyable, I can now look back at that and have some fairly profound insights as to the nature of my drinking, why I drank, and what caused me to continue for such a long time, in amongst which was I thought I was enjoying it. And I would argue I probably was in the better days, but it certainly didn't end up being enjoyable. Quite the opposite. But fundamentally, it was a coping mechanism. Life seemed easier, less stressful, less worrisome after a few drinks. Again, on reflection, I can see that it only really took me a couple of drinks, maybe three, to get into that zone, that sweet spot, where I just felt life was a bit more comfortable, a bit easier to deal with. However, as an alcoholic, having whether it's genetic or psychological isn't really the point. As an alcoholic, I never stopped after two or three drinks. In fact, that was just the igniting the fuse. And I would then continue to drink. And that was the pattern throughout my life. I've never had one or two drinks, wouldn't know how to. It was always full on, intentional or otherwise, and mostly it was intentional. And I was maybe lucky with some fairly robust genes that I could drink a lot, and I used to pride myself in the fact that I could outdrink even the big boys at the rugby club. Having no idea the damage I was actually doing to myself, because as a young man, as a student, whatever, you have a better ability to recover and survive. But even in those early days, I would drink and get drunk four or five nights a week, particularly on weekends. It was just nonstop oblivion. And therefore, drinking was just an integral part of my life. It wasn't something I specifically saved up for or looked forward to. It was just there on a daily basis. And it was in the years where in Scotland, just ahead of England, the pub started to open all day, so there was no excuse to stop, go for a pint at lunchtime, and the next thing you knew, it was breakfast. And it just seemed extremely normal, and that then influenced how I treated my work. I went into work situations where drinking was easy access, and I'll skip out the next couple of decades because it was the same pattern. I, you know, got married, had kids, did all the supposedly normal things, but drink always featured. But in the last number of years, it had gone from being what I thought was optional, and it probably wasn't, the choice to drink. I now question that, whether I could have stopped without proper support and assistance. But in the last number of years, my drinking was out of necessity. I became a breakfast drinker because I couldn't function without alcohol in my system. It was just that simple. And of course, having a glass or two of wine to start the day just set me up to continue throughout the day. And I didn't drink to get drunk. I would claim I rarely was drunk, although I think it was just permanently drunk. I just kept topping up. Every hour and a half, every couple of hours, I'd have another glass of wine, and you know, by the time the end of the working day would come, maybe at 6 o'clock, I'd probably had at least a bottle of wine and then another one or two in the evening. And without even trying, I was drinking 3 bottles of wine a day. If I tried, then, there was no real limit to that. But those were very desperate and toxic days. And the drink had got me so intensely that it was just permanently in my system, and I ended up being arrested and ended up in the alcohol and drug court for multiple drink driving offences. Just to give you an indication of how bad my drinking was, I had 3 offences in 10 months. On each occasion, I was nearly 5 times over the limit as it was back then, which is higher than it was now, so nothing to be proud of. 3 in 10 months might sound like quite a lot. If I add to that the fact that during that 10 months I was 6 months sober, my strike rate for drink driving was just off the radar. And the truth of the matter was, I was never sober. And again, on reflection, once I got sober, the mystification I had as to why I was so high on my breathalyzer tests became easy to realise. It wasn't because I'd drunk so much that day, it's because I probably woke up 2 or 3 times over the limit and had just topped up to 4 or 5 times over. And in that condition of being permanently over the driving limit and therefore permanently intoxicated, that became normal. I did not know what it was to be sober in that last 2 to 3 year period. And strange as it might seem, the third of those drink driving offences, which is the one that got me into the alcohol and drug court, because they had determined that I was a serious enough case and such a big risk to society that I actually needed treatment to get well. Best thing that's ever happened to me. I doubt you hear many people saying being nicked and the threat of going to jail and being in the legal system was a good thing, but I was ready. I kind of knew I was ready. That 6 months of sobriety during those 10 months, I'd certainly learned that I could be sober. However, and I would like to highlight this to people out there, there's a difference between stopping drinking and staying stopped. And after 6 months of sobriety, I thought I was okay to drink. I had I planned 1 glass of wine and was off my face for 10 weeks. I cannot drink safely. I now know that, and on a daily basis I remind myself that 1 drink's too much for me. And I now live my life without the fears and insecurities that once drove me to drink. And that's entirely down to focusing on my recovery, being a regular participant in AA, doing the recommended things in the 12 steps, keeping engaged with good people who have similar challenges and similar solutions, and who live a good life. I don't miss my old life, and in many ways I live exactly my own old life in terms of what I do. I just don't drink. And, I certainly proved to myself that one of my fears that life in sobriety would be tedious and boring is not the case. It's as much fun as it ever was, and I now remember it and don't offend as many people as I used to. That's my story. I hope it works well for you. Thanks.
Thanks, Dougie. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the next person to share is Christy.
Hi, I'm Christy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Christy.
It's a real privilege to be here this morning and to share my experience, strength and hope with everyone out there. It's really good to be here. So my journey and my story of sobriety is that I got clean in my early 20s, and I'm in my 40s now, and I'm not really sure where that time's gone, but I'll fill you in a little bit about how that went for me. I would describe my drinking as I would have been a binge drinker. I found that I grew up in a family on the North Shore, and I was adopted out at birth, and I found that, you know, I feel like I struggled, I guess, and I always felt different as a person. And I think, you know, when I found alcohol, it gave me a sense of... I guess, you know, for me, when I started drinking, it just gave me that something, you know. And if I look back at my life and in my drinking, you know, I guess I've always medicated myself. And when I first got sober, I realised that, you know, I'd always use lollies and other things to make me feel good. And so, and I smoked and I did all that stuff. But when I found drink, it kind of became, like my best friend. And, you know, so I had a relatively short drinking career. I drank for 10 years. And, you know, and through that I worked and, you know, I was out there living my life and all that kind of thing. But in the end of my drinking, you know, I realised that it wasn't fun anymore. And, you know, we come to a part in our lives where we realise that life isn't good, and I definitely got to that point in my life. And so I started going to AA meetings and then ended up in treatment, and you know, I'm glad that I did that. Kind of making that you know, my priority, I guess, like to be clean was really important for me. You know, because I did anything in my drinking. And so when I first got sober after I attended AA and then went to treatment, you know, I guess I was like, if you had told me to go and stand on my head, you know, in the corner of the room, I would have done that to stay sober. And, you know, I was so desperate when I got here, you know, that when I came to meetings and I heard them sharing about, you know, doing the suggested things and things like that, you know, it was really important for me to, you know, to follow that. And one of the, you know, the things that I really heard in Alcoholics Anonymous was, you know, if you want what we have, you have to do what we do. And and for me, you know, it was kind of a turning point, I guess, in my sobriety that, you know, that if I wanted to get well and remain sober, is that I actually would have to do some things, you know. And they're called suggested things for a reason. And, you know, so I got a sponsor, and having a sponsor is one of the most invaluable tools of the program. You know, so a sponsor is kind of like a guide, someone who guides you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did a meeting a day for the first 2.5 years of my recovery. You know, I just did heaps of meetings. I got involved. I started doing service. You know, I was really passionate about my recovery, and I still am today. So just like carried on doing that stuff. So I didn't work for about a year of my sobriety just so I could put my recovery first, which was like suggested. And they used to say, you know, if you like whatever you put in front of your sobriety, you'll lose if you don't, you know, take this seriously. And so I was willing to do that, you know. And they talk about being open, honest and willing, and you know, as spiritual principles of the program. So I did that, you know, and the benefits of doing that stuff was, you know, amazing. And, yeah, so carried on with that. I started getting back into work, which was fantastic, you know, but I still had my sobriety and I still, you know, was doing heaps of meetings and all that kind of stuff. You know, and as I've kind of stayed clean over the years, you know, I've stayed really connected to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, you know, I've travelled and I've done meetings all round. You know, I went to the Bali Convention recently with a bunch of 10 girls. You know, we're just, you know, we are just so lucky that we can take Alcoholics Anonymous and go anywhere in the world and have this opportunity. Yeah, so I feel really, really fortunate. You know, I've had a daughter in sobriety. I've had a career. You know, I've bought a house. You know, I've done things, you know, in my journey that I wouldn't have been able to do if I hadn't have been clean, you know, and been in sobriety. Yeah, always had a sponsor. You know, I've worked through the steps several times with a sponsor, which is really important. You know, I've given up smoking, I've given up other drugs that I've used, I've been completely abstinent from everything. And, you know, and it hasn't been easy. You know, I think if it had been easy, I wouldn't have done it. You know, I was a person growing up where I would give lots of things a go, but I never finished anything. So in sobriety, you know, I've actually finished stuff. And, you know, the length of time I have in recovery and sobriety now, you know, is pretty much, you know, it's all, I give it credit to my higher power and to the program, you know, because it's something that I've done, you know, for the longest period of time in my life. Yeah, so, you know, look, I'm really grateful to be here today. You know, it isn't easy, but, you know, it's definitely worthwhile. And, you know, I've got great friends in this program. You know, I believe in connection and, you know, I've been around for a few years now and have lots of different AA friends in different towns and cities and countries, and feel really blessed that it doesn't matter where I go, you know, that there's a meeting. You know, it's just such a good life. And I guess now that I'm clean and I'm sober, I have choices. And, you know, when I was drinking, I didn't have a lot of choice. You know, my life became quite narrow, you know, and people didn't want to know me. I didn't know what was going to happen next. And my drinking was quite unpredictable. You know, where now, you know, my life is very simple. I have good people in it. You know, I have a good job. You know, again, I have a daughter that's never seen me use or drink, which is a blessing. You know, we talk openly about our feelings and our emotions, you know, which is something that I never had growing up. So it's a blessing, you know. I feel really lucky to be part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I get involved with AA because I feel supported and it's nice to give back. So when I'm feeling... you know, like sometimes, you know, I may not feel like sharing or doing stuff, but I do it because I get the benefit of, one, helping myself, but helping other people. You know, and in my drinking, I was quite a selfish person and only really did what I wanted to do for me. You know, but today it is nice to give back and actually feel the benefit of giving to other people without the need of anything in return. Yeah, so, you know, it's been really nice to be here today and hope you've picked something up and thanks very much.
Thanks, Christy.
Thanks, Christy.
You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the last person we have to share this morning is Shane.
Hi, I'm Shane and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Shane.
Thanks for everyone being with me here this morning. I've done this a few times, but I still get the nerves around what I'm going to say, even though a lot of it's just, you know, just my life thus far. So just a little bit about my drinking. I started, I think, the popular age is 14, and that's when I started. And it just changed my life. I mean, it was a mess on that first day. You know, we'd broken something. We'd been told not to do it again, and we promised that we wouldn't. And but that promise was broken in the following weekend, and we just repeated that, you know, over and over and over again. And it didn't seem to be doing much harm. I mean, we'd break things, but we'd get away with it. And And then, yeah, that was that carried on. That cycle carried on, you know, into my 20s. And not, you know, relationships would break up and, you know, cars would get smashed. Dougie talked about, you know, DICs. And but I just thought it was sort of a natural transition through life. And, you know, I didn't see that the drinking was you know, was playing a major factor in that. It was there it was there for the good times, it was there for the bad times. And yeah, so you know, I didn't really see a problem. I going into my 30s, things kind of got a little bit, you know, there'd be more the vehicle smashes, incidents with police themselves, losing cars, losing relationships, losing jobs, losing touch with your friends and your family. And I can still remember the day, you know, that I was with a girl, and had been with her for a few years, and we'd just been to an engagement ceremony. And I remember thinking, you know, I knew I was going along and I knew I had to be on best behaviour. And maybe a part of that was the reason why I got about an hour into it and just said to everyone that I was feeling crook and I had to leave. And, you know, what I had to do was go home and drink by myself in a room. And that was really quite a defining moment for me. I remember it at the time. And from there, I never really looked back with my drinking. I just carried on, and that, you know, the social part of it, unless it could be avoided, I just left behind, and I tried to just keep my drinking, you know. I thought I had, at the start, I thought there was boundaries to it. I thought I wouldn't start drinking until after I finished work. But then when work, because I was working for myself, I could change those hours of work, and so I'd end up finding myself, and, you know, I'd finish work at 1 o'clock, well, I might as well start drinking. And then in the end, there wasn't any rules. I was started at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you know, I was trying to work, but probably by about 9:30, I was so drunk and slurring that, you know, even conversations that I was having with people, they'd say, "Are you okay?" And then I'd shut a lot of people out of my life, and yet some people would still feel the passion to come around and see me, and they would get, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning, and I'm rolling drunk and having to make some bullshit excuse, you know, as to how I found myself. And normally it would be, you know, that I'd worked night shift, or I'd had a hard day, or I'd had a breakup, or I'd had something. But yeah, and so then you go into the sort of the last 10 years of my life, and you know what Dougie was saying before, you know, I just can't grasp, you know, I don't pull any good times out of that. I mean, there must have been isolated parts of fun, but a lot of it was, you know, in a room by yourself, knocking yourself out. And, you know, even though I was, you know, theoretically on lockdown, I managed to still create havoc. And, you know, the power of the internet does that. And so I got myself in trouble with the police again. They raided my house, and you know, again, I had no tie-in with that to drinking. I didn't think that was the reason why yeah, they left. I started drinking again, but it did have some impact on me there. I must have got to another juncture in my drinking where I thought, you know, this is a pretty sad end for you, Shane. And I kind of already knew that. That was a bit of a wake-up call, and I made a call to a treatment facility, and a couple of days later I was there, and I really just felt like the world had been lifted off my shoulders for the first time in 30 years. You know, I didn't have to be in charge looking after myself, and you know, and I could speak for the first time honestly and openly about what my life had become, and you know, who I felt I'd become. In that last 6 months, I hadn't looked at myself in the mirror. I was so ashamed of what I'd become, and so you know, getting back to knowing me again, and without a bottle in my hand, it was an amazing journey, and I. I've said it before. It was probably the most fun that I'd had in that last 10 years, because I was back in touch with human beings again. We were all in this life raft together, and trying to figure out how we were going to stay in there. And I was blessed. I had an amazing counsellor, and he guided me through a lot of the stuff that was going in my head, and he gave me some recommendations about what I could do going forward. And one of them was to go to a lot of AA meetings. And because fortunately I didn't have work, and also fortunately I was still filled with an immense amount of fear that I was going to pick up a drink the moment I walked out, I decided to take his recommendation. And so that afternoon I was at my first meeting, and I went to a lot of meetings. I don't think I did 90 and 90, but I did 86 or something in 90, and it just set me up as a good base. And I it didn't matter which meeting I was going to, I felt like I was in the right place. And I'm 5.5 years sober now, and I still feel like this is my place, this is my tribe, and I need this in my life. I often think to myself, what would my life be like without AA? To turn it another way around, from what Doug said, was it would be dull. I think my life's amazing in AA. I've made some really fantastic friends, and you need an outlet when. Me left to myself, I'm going to implode. I've said it before. If you took a 5-minute track of what's going on in my head and played it back to me and to some other health professionals, they'd probably bring out the straitjacket and take me away. So there has to be some out. Also what Kirsty was saying there, when I came into AA, I got a sponsor reasonably early on. Quite reluctantly, but knew that I had to do that. Otherwise, I'd just go backwards out of it. And if he'd asked me to start selling Tupperware, I would have done that. I was desperate. I just didn't want to go back to the life that I had, and I still don't. It's been an amazing journey thus far, and I can't say it's always easy, and but it's been fun, and and it's growth. What happens when you start drinking is I feel your emotional growth stunts, and so maybe I'm up to about a 21-year-old now, so I'll leave it at that. Thanks very much. Okay, bye.
Thanks, Shane.
Thank you, Shane.
Thanks.
That brings us towards the end of our meeting. If you've been listening and identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box under meetings lists, there's a list of all meetings in the Greater Auckland area and right throughout the country. You can also phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA Meeting on Air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.